Hi, this is Bonnie Gillespie, and you're tuned in to The Work.
It's Kristen May Carbone! Yeah!
Yay! Hello, everybody!
So excited to have you on The Work. Thank you for joining me, sweetheart.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Yay! For the excitement. All right. So as always, I love to start these with, tell us a little bit about your self-management for actor's journey. How did you and I first, I know when I first met you in person, when did I pop on your radar with the work that I'm doing?
Well, I was, I live in New York and that's where I'm still currently based. And I had graduated from college. I had a couple hiccups in my acting journey and I felt like I wasn't getting anywhere. I felt like I kind of was missing something that a lot of people that I went to school with had, who might have been in the industry longer or know more people in the industry. And I felt like I wasn't quite making the headway that I wanted. So I started working with a business coach who recommended, she's like, oh my God, please, please, you need to read Bonnie Gillespie's column at Actors Access. And I was like, okay, cool. So I was reading and I was reading. And I was reading and I was like, oh my God, this is a goldmine of information. So, and she's like, well, she's really great on Twitter. So follow her on Twitter. So I started following on Twitter and then I saw Get in Gear and I was like, well, great. Let's, you know, this is something for everybody. Let's try it. And I had a blast and, you know, there's the photo contest and I'm competitive as heck. So I was like, on it. I was like, if you want some weirdly creative photos, I know they're still there somewhere. They were so much fun. And then
you were very clever with your photos. I remember that.
I thoroughly enjoy a good, you know, photo competition. I'm like, good. I get to explore my other creative side. So, and then you offered SMFA online and I was like, done, I have to do this. And I remember you came in person to New York and I took a class there. I did alumni master class with you. And now I'm masterminding and I'm here on The Work.
Amazing.
Yes.
So let's track before all of that. If we go to your humble beginnings, what was your creative spark? What made you say, I'm going to be a creative?
Well, I grew up in a very creative household and a household that has always supported any of the things I've ever wanted to do. I don't come from a lot of money, any money really. And so, but my parents were still very adamant about putting us first and as much as they could, allowing us to explore our dreams and our goals and things we wanted. And I always joke that there were three things I wanted to be when I was about 3 or 4 years old. I wanted to be a fairy princess, a queen, or an actress. Well, first one, that it just isn't going to work. Second one, unfortunately, Kate Middleton beat me to being a queen. So,
so close.
I'm like, oh, she got Prince William. And I was like, well, acting, I guess acting, you know, isn't a bad gig. My mother, is very artistically minded. She paints, she is huge to photography, teaches classes and stuff. And so art, and my grandmother is amazing. Was amazing at sewing. So art has always been a part of me. Anyway, so my parents were great about letting me do, you know, school plays and some, they were hesitant to really like push me into the industry. And I'm from Connecticut, so there's not a whole heck of a lot there anyway. But, you know, at some point in high school, I was doing two shows and a sport per semester of high school. I was in shows. I had rehearsal for my school show, like Mondays and Wednesdays, and for an outside teen rep theater company, Tuesdays and Thursdays, plus volleyball practices, plus games. And I think at that point, my parents were like, well, maybe we'll let her go and do her thing. And from there, it's just been plugging away ever since. So
there's so many people that don't feel like they come from a family that supports their creative endeavor. So I'd like to explore this a little bit, like coming from a family that's like, great, you're into this, go do this. Like, what is that like?
Well, it's really interesting. And for the record, for those of you who are listening in, I just got a little note in the bottom. My father's actually here right now watching live. Dino Carbone at the bottom. That's my dad. Hi, Dad. He was really excited to come in and listen to me right now. So he was so sad because when we were having technical snafus earlier, yeah. he's like, I missed it. I'm so mad. I'm like, don't worry.
You didn't miss it. Yeah.
You didn't miss anything. It's fine. Well, it's really lovely because, you know, it's funny because they're very practical. They're practical dreamers is what I like to say. You know,
Good.
It's, you know, all about supporting your dreams, you know, fighting for, but you have to fight for what you believe in, and we'll support you as much as we can, but you need to do this on your own because you're an adult, and they've always treated me like an adult since I was little, since I was 10 years old. You know, they've let me stay home. I've been relatively self-sufficient, learning to cook for myself and things. So they support me creatively because they know I can take care of myself practically. And it does get tricky. You know, there are things about this business that obviously they don't understand. And it's funny because I feel like the person who understands the business side of this most is my sister, because my sister's in social media and marketing. And she really gets the whole nuance of connecting and organic and development. And she's been, every person in my family, from my siblings to my parents to my aunts and uncles, who jokingly try to give me, you know, ideas for scripts and things every time I go home for the holidays. But it's been really nice to have my sister, who gets that business side and the content creation side in particular. And she's been really supportive, and they all kind of have their piece where they come in for me, which I think is really awesome. And I know not a lot of people have that. So it's really, really great.
It's amazingly awesome. I had a great aunt that until I was 37, because that's when she died. Every time we talked on the phone, it was, when are you going to stop this foolishness and come home? And I'm like, wow, I have a best-selling book. I am like, wait. When am I'm going to stop this foolishness and then come home to the place I've not been most of my life? What? So I love that you've got this amazing support, this network of we believe in you. I mean, my God, that cannot be understated as to the value of that in your personal approach to this business. I want to talk about the content creation because you brought that up. Let's talk about what that process is like and how you got turned on to, I want to create things, not just I want to act.
Well, I've always been I'm tooting my own horn here. I've always been a fairly decent.
Go for it.
I've always been a fairly decent writer. I love my mother. I think it was her greatest regret that I didn't minor in, writing or English or something like that, of anything, because she, you know, she really loves the written word and what I do with it. But to be honest, I had heard about content creation and about create your own work, create the roles that you want. And I said, I don't know. And then it got to the point where it was like, you know, why don't you try it? And I was, you know, I'm still very much at the beginning of my career, even though I'm further than where I was. And I was very frustrated with the roles that were available for me. I didn't want to be hot girl in a bikini number 5. I'm smarter than, you know, the blonde bimbo, you know, boyfriend, friend person. And I want more than that. I think I have more to offer than that. And there's nothing wrong with playing the girlfriend or the wife, but I encourage people when writing to write more, because I think female characters are capable of more. And I got frustrated. I said, you know what? I'm going to do something. And I was living in a weird situation at the time with one really awesome roommate, one really horrible roommate who was awful and vaguely just a terrible human being. And I was like, oh, sometimes I just want to, I don't want to. And I was wondering, I was like, what happens if a girl is emotionally pushed to a limit? You know, she feels frustrated in her day-to-day life. It's a very millennial story. And I knew that writing it, even though I don't feel like a fit into the traditional millennial narrative. Yeah. But it was a very millennial story about this girl who feels ignored by her boyfriend, which I felt ignored by, you know, people like in my life, you know, abandoned by some of her friends who were only used to her for her own amusement, and, you know, had a roommate who, so ever her home space, which is supposed to be a sacred safe space,
right,
is constantly disrupted by this person who is rude to her, like talks smack about her on the phone to other people loudly so she can hear. Ew. Passive aggressive. Yeah, really. And I was like, what would happen to a person if she went past that limit? And that was a sort of what was originally called empty apartment two, but became Empty Rooms, which was what I lovingly refer to as my little baby tentacle monster, because it turned into this thing that I never would have imagined.
Wait, Kristen, when is this? When was this happening?
2013, 2013, I think. Okay. I started. All
right. Okay.
Late 2012, I think I'm trying to figure out my calendar of life as I use my hands.
I love that.
Late 2012 to early 2013, I started writing it. I started filming it. Is that 2000? No, so it might've been 2013. We finished filming in 2000, technically 2015, because we had finished filming 2014, but because I have to go back again, get lost in my own story. I wrote it as a 12-part miniseries, web series, with the intention of maybe, you know, depending on how some characters developed, if people liked them, maybe developing their story, because there's really no miniseries anthology going on YouTube, because that's the problem that I noticed, is that a lot of people will create a series, and, you know, they might put her out after one season or one and a half seasons if they don't get funding. And so that was my original goal. I met with a director friend of mine who suggested another director friend of his. His name's Jim. And I met him and he's like, I love this. He's like, I think you've held yourself back. Write the story that you want to tell. So I said, okay. And I went back. He's like, it was a week later. I got back to him. He's like, you did this in a week? I was like, yeah. He goes, okay. Awesome. Try this. And so for 2 months, we went back and forth finagling it. And then he's like, let's do it. And so we set up a casting. I met some awesome actors, and I got about 2-3 weeks before shooting, and Jim had come back from vacation. He goes, I've got, so I did some rewrites and tweaking. He's like, I rewrote it as a three-part series. Read it. Let me know what you think. I took it home on the train and I read it and I cried, because for me, this has been something so part of my life, and it was different, but still me. And that was hard, because, you know, but I'm also the type of person who, again, is a practical dreamer. And I said, well, you know what? This story does have a little bit more punch. It's got a little bit more vibe. So let's go with it. And I made some suggestions and we did some tweaking. We shot that over a bunch of weeks in summer. I dealt with my original cinematographer dropped out after the first weekend. So I was supposed to film the next weekend, and all the other weekends we had. And so I found someone within a day or two who is now a cinematographer I use very often. His name is Alex. But I was at work on a phone finding out that my DP stepped away, and I cried at work. Again, so I call it my little baby tentacle monster, because every time I think I've got something going, something else shoots out. But we wrapped. A couple months went by. We had to do some reshoots and fix a few things. And then I think I got it about another 8 or so months later. And we have been out on the festival circuit ever since. It was interesting because, it's a testament of perseverance and a testament of how much I love something. And it's hard because I'm a doer, and post-production isn't something I physically can do. I can't correct. I can't edit. I can't do those things. So I've been doing a lot in the promotion stuff, and it's hard because, you know, it deals with a part of me that a lot of people I think is uncomfortable, which is self-promotion. And I'm okay with promoting for myself, but promoting my baby, I have to remind myself not to be too cautious, and just, you know, it's important to, and get it out there.
It's so interesting to hear you say that, because I can promote self-management for actors all day. Like I can absolutely push all the info out there about my baby book. But if it's about me and something I do, I am so much more reserved. And you're telling me for you, it was harder to promote your baby than to promote yourself?
I thought that was so strange for me.
Yeah.
Because it usually isn't like that. I think, especially because it was my first.
Okay.
There was that weird secret part of me that I pretend doesn't exist, that wants people to like me.
Yeah.
And I am so proud of it, and I wanted it to be a strong showing, that I was like, oh, what if they don't? And then I eventually, you know, it took me like a month or two. Then I was like, Kristen, if you don't get it out there, it's not going.
Yeah. And this was a big one for me. Learning that marketing is not being braggy. It's not about like showing off your stuff. It is, if you believe you've created something that the world needs, you're sharing it with the world. And wouldn't you share with the world anything that you learned about that the world needs, whether you created it or not? So this happens to be something that you created. Oh, I would like the world to know this exists. Like, when we come from that perspective, I think marketing becomes a little less icky.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, once I, you know, learned that it's every, you know, it's a story. And just because it's not another person's story doesn't mean it doesn't have value. Doesn't mean it's not to be shared. And, you know, I, for the first person I met that told me to my face that they weren't a fan of it. And I had to go home and sit with it. And he's like, "You were great. I didn't like," and he gave me the things that he didn't like. And well, I had to go.
Well, like, which were what? Like technical things or?
There's some performances he didn't like, but also I think he didn't understand why the lead character's name is Melina. He didn't understand why she reacted in certain ways. And I think it's because, despite the fact that I try to say that I'm not a millennial, I do still understand parts of that mindset where you feel, you know, part of, I think the millennial mindset is feeling like everything means so much to you, you know, and a lot of things get very personal. And I think for some people, people who don't understand that or who've never lived like that, that's a really hard thing, is to understand that it's a very personal thing. So everything that she's experiencing, to some people, you're like, why is it a big deal to her? Well, because it is. And I don't know that it matters outside of that. And, you know, I had a thing where I was like, are you just telling me you liked my performance because you know me? He's like, no, you were great. And I was like, but I think one of the biggest compliments that I got, and I think which is one of the biggest testaments to self-management for actors, was that a lot of people told me, it's not what I expected of you as a person. It's not the first part of my bite of my brand, but they're like, it was so easy to see that side of you because it didn't feel so outside the box. It still felt like parts of you, but just a little bit of a different side. And I think that was really awesome too, to get that, even though I'd written it before brand was much of a part of my life, there will always still be parts of my brand and I can't escape them.
Isn't it nice to know that your brand is a part of how you are just built? I mean, it's in your infrastructure.
Oh yeah, because it takes so much of the pressure off of you. I don't have to try to be I'm going to be me no matter what I do. Right. So I might as well just be me all the time and just be great at being me. And I love that I'm getting more of that out into the world, and that I'm feeling that more, that I've recognized that, because it makes the journey it's so much easier.
So let's talk about what you've got coming up and what kinds of things you are, I'm guessing, building from a foundation of your brand. Because I would imagine, knowing that, okay, wait, there's a benefit to letting people know this is what I do, this is who I am, your content creation becomes a piece of this whole, like, this Kristen May Carbone stew. And
it's a stew.
Yeah. Is it a stew?
Talk
about your process a little bit and the yes and to all of this.
In terms of content creation or just.
And what you're targeting as an actor and the kinds of things that are showing up on your radar now. Yeah. All of it. Cause I imagine it's all linked.
It is all linked. Yeah. It's funny because we had talked in a class years ago about me taking a stand-up comedy class, because comedy is something I feel, you know, jokes I feel very comfortable with.
Yeah, you do.
And I fought tooth and nail because it terrified me. And the funniest thing is that I am really good about conquering my fears. For those who don't know, I went bungee jumping in Australia just because I was like, oh, I'm kind of scared of this. Challenge accepted. Let's go. So because of that kind of thing, I was like, you know what? This scares me. And I lost my last excuse to avoid it. So I was like, well, I've got no choice now. Might as well take it. So I start a stand-up comedy class on Tuesday.
What? Yeah. And the scariest thing I ever have done in my life, 7 minutes of stand-up at the Comedy Store. I have had a gun pulled on me, and the scariest thing I've experienced in my life was 7 minutes at the Comedy Store. No question. Like, that shit's crazy. So you start Tuesday.
I start Tuesday. And you know what's so funny? Now that it's coming up, I feel less scared about it. I was I've had sets going in my head, I feel like, for the last couple of days, where I'm like, oh, I could write a set about that. I bet I could do something about that. And it's funny that it's just now that it's, And I think, you know, it's really funny too, thinking back, I think I felt very similar when I was planning my bungee jump and I was looking it up. And then I think the moment I bought it, there was that moment where like my chest just like clenched and I was like, well, oh, too late now. I'm already committed.
Money spent. Gonna happen.
Money spent. Can't get out of it. And as I got closer and closer to it, I mean, I'm sure the morning of, you know, when I'm walking in, I'm going to like feel like I did when I was walking up to the bungee platform and like my chest started like, and my asthma started kicking in a wee bit, but
yeah,
you know, and then I jump like I did and I, you know, think I die for 2 seconds and then I'm fine. You know, and I'll get through it. I'm actually
die a little bit. No big deal.
So I die a little bit. You know, I've died once before in a bungee jump. It's fine. You come back. I'm a phoenix. It's good. What are you gonna do? But it was good. And I think to me that influences all the other parts of my brand because now I know where I kind of fit in comedy wise, and I've started to figure out where I fit. So I'm writing more projects that fit that brand, and I've been right. You know, I get ideas for writing and for content out of thin air. And it kind of is a matter of processing them. And I've been very good recently about actually writing everything down into a notebook that I have with me, literally right here.
I was going to say, like, well, what's your system for, because when you are a creative and ideas are constantly firing, like, how do you organize that when you're not a terribly organized human being? Like, what do you do? How do you create a system?
Well, I've gone a long time without a system, and I finally got to the point where I was like, you know what? I will feel so much better about not losing quote. Like I'll get an idea for a quote for something. I've got a feature that I want to write. It's for later. It's a little bit darker. It's a little bit more serious and dramatic. I know I want to save that for another time. But I had a quote for that pop into my head the other day, and I whipped out my notebook. You know, I keep this, or I keep for a long time, a dear friend of mine gave me a little blue sparkly, of course it was sparkly, notebook that I've kept in my purse, and it rained glitter everywhere, but it had all of my ideas and I had to transfer stuff over. And it's really easy to keep things in your head and be like, oh, it's important to me. I'll remember. Well, no, brains have a lot of stuff in there. And so just get it into one thing. Even I've got a Word document with a ton of ideas and quotes. Should consolidate them all. I think I've got six, but it's really easy to lose track. And so I've been very good about putting things down because I get all the time ideas for shows and, films. And I've been doing this really great thing, that I started for myself called the Alphabet Comedy Prompts, which has helped me generate ideas. I basically wrote the alphabet in reverse starting with Z to A. And the first word that popped into my head for whatever that letter was or phrase, like, I don't know, whatever. Anyway, so I did zeitgeist. I had yarn. I had, I couldn't think of a word for X.
Yarn made me laugh. That's great.
And so I've been writing a little short scene or something for every word. And some of them I'm like, oh yeah. I might tweak that into a short film or I might add that into a feature. And that's kind of helped get my ideas going. You know, if you're having a hard time generating ideas for content, finding little ways to generate a spark and just seeing where your brain takes and not self-centering. Yeah. I don't self-center at all. Even if I think the word is silly, I'm like, nope, you already said it. You're committed. Lava is your word. Great. You're putting down lava. Good luck writing a short on lava. But that was been really, really helpful for me as well. And then I just, you know, I've just started asking around. I've got a couple director friends of mine and some people I know who want to direct. And I said, here are a couple scenes I'm interested in doing. Are you interested? And most of the time they're like, heck yeah, because it's, you know, it's a way to get people out on projects that aren't so precious. So you don't feel so, you know, you don't get so nervous about them. You know, I shot something last year with, another ninja, Brandy. And I had written something and it was totally my brand. And I was like, oh, who can I get this to play this part? Then I looked at it. I was like, oh my gosh, this totally fits Brandy.
Right.
And I said, you know, do you want some real footage? Let's shoot something. You know, I filled out the SAG paperwork and stuff just in case, because she is SAG and, you know, I like to get all my ducks in a row.
Good girl.
And I said, hey, Jim, do you want to shoot this? He said, great. You know, and we all went to a park in Brooklyn and we just shot it. Literally, I think it was, took about 4 hours and we just sat and that it was, cause it was really quick. It was maybe two, three pages and we just banged it out real quick and I've got it back. I'm putting it into my reel and for fun, I'm actually submitting it out to festivals because it's like maybe 2 minutes. And so if there's a 2 minute slot in a festival, I'm like, let's get it out. Why not?
Totally. And then it's IMDb and it's, I mean, when you think about all the ripple effects for creating something like that, it's not just the passion behind it. Although that really is the big item. Yeah. There are also rewards for doing it.
There's so many ways to get things out nowadays, yeah. You know, Vimeo, YouTube, you know, even if I put it into there's some festivals that don't care if it's online right. for free, especially if it's under 2 minutes short.
True.
I can have a lot of platforms within. I've got a lot of ways to get work out that I enjoy and that I'm proud of and that I'm passionate about and that, you know, it covers both things. It covers my creative fulfillment of roles that I want that are fun and interesting and engaging, even if they're not like seriously dramatic, as long as they're full characters that I can create, that is awesome. And then I get the business side of being able to match it up with my brand and put things out into the world that I want, stories that I want to tell. And eventually I'm working up now to, I've got a couple scripts that I'm proud of. I've got a writing workshop this weekend and I'm tweaking them, you know, during the workshop with them in mind, that I want to get out to more production companies and directors and expand my network and get that new stuff going. So
let's talk about some of your on-camera life. What is it that has been going on for you that you're excited about and that maybe if there's anything you'd like to promote here?
Well,
have at it.
Empty Rooms, what I mentioned earlier, yeah, Empty Rooms, yeah, yeah. My short film, is out on the festival circuit right now. We're actually in the Actors Forum is doing a festival, The Moving Image, in July. They've changed the dates a couple of times, so I have to re-solidify them. But if you follow me on Twitter, I am sure I will tweet out about it.
How can people follow you on Twitter? Go ahead and state that now.
K May Carbone. It's if you're watching this on Blab either now or later, it is the exact same spelling. If you are not, it is the at symbol K as in Kristen, M-A-E as in my middle name, car plus bone, slap it all together.
I love that you're car plus bone.
Because otherwise people like go crazy trying to pronounce it. I'm sure. Like, it's Carbone, guys. Just make it easy.
The Sarbonne. Yeah.
They add letters. It's Carbone. Pizza Hut for years.
I get Giuseppe out of Gillespie. Are you fucking kidding me? I know, girl.
How?
Oh. No, could not be less Italian. I am so Scotch Irish. Of course, it's Gillespie. Whatever. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, what else? What else do you have going on that we need to know about?
I've got that on. I've got Coming Out, actually, which was the one I shot with Brandy. That's also starting in on the festival circuit. We're waiting to hear back about that. If you heard or saw the episode with Rosalie Tenset, she was talking about the series Trending, which she's doing with a bunch of the New York City ninjas, myself included. I have a very fun, very on-brand, more guest star kind of role, which is what I had asked for initially because I wasn't sure what projects I was working on. And it's great. It involves a coconut, and that I think is the best part, really. And I've got some stuff...
I have questions. Coconut?
There's a picture of me holding a coconut being like.
So like you're interviewing the coconut?
Like I'm staring at it lost and confused because I kind of, my character kind of is. She's a total squirrel. It's, you know.
Let's talk about that. We both went back and forth on squirrel and squirmy, squirrely and squirmy when we were doing your log line in a masterclass in New York. And I would love to talk about how you embraced your you-ness in all of that.
You know, it's funny because it's, I have undiagnosed attention deficit disorder. And I've just gone with it. And it's a long time I've fought it, and it's hard. And it's, again, fighting your brand and fighting who you are is just going to make it painful for you. And I've struggled for years. And what I eventually learned was, there's some things worth rebelling against, but it is so much easier to outsmart and outthink myself than trying to fight it. And so I've, you know, had to learn to adapt. I've had to learn to give myself, if you're watching this and if you're listening, I could tell you I'm a very physical person. I've learned to give myself physical like touch triggers. Like I'll touch my nose if I'm trying to remember something, or I'll touch my fingers. And it looks ridiculous, but it helps me center my thoughts. Or I set up certain things. I've built structures and things around my inability to focus. And I've learned to embrace it and just celebrate the fact that there's going to be a lot of random things happening. But that means that I'm the person who's bringing the fun. And I'm okay with being that person.
So how do you align that with your brand? How do you parlay this thing that most people would try to fight, not only into something that you're going to embrace, but into something that you can market with? Like that's the part that I really want to ninja up with this. Like, what is that thing that allows you to go, not only is this who I am, this is what I embrace, and here's how it becomes castable.
Well, it's making sure that I allow that self to flourish without diminishing the fact that I am still a professional. And I think that really is the biggest thing. You know, I keep myself professional, but I allow that kind of quirky, spontaneous person to shine through my professional behavior. You know, I'm all barrels of fun and laughs on set, and I allow that quirky brightness to come in into a casting. You know, and I've had casting directors tell me, oh, I love having you in. You're just so bright, and you bring that fun sunshine, and you put a twist on it I never would have expected. And I'm like, glad to help. And you know, that it's keeping that being of service and keeping being true to my brand, and just adding that slightly enough of a professional sheen that keeps things, you know, smooth and coasting without, you know, rocking the boat too much.
So KMC, how do you stay balanced? Because I think that one of the biggest questions for all artists is, I am a creative. I have a lot of ideas. I also have to have a survival job, you know, got to pay rent. How do you stay balanced with everything that you pursue?
Part of what I had to learn about myself, and I've spent a lot of time learning about myself and how I operate, how I think, how things affect me, what things make me laugh, what things upset me. And I've taken a lot of time and spent a lot of individual moments over a course of a long time. You know, just doing all that at once can be very overwhelming, but I had to learn a lot about myself, and I had to learn how to outsmart my laziness if I get, you know, if I'm just not feeling it. I had to learn how to tamper down my drive when, you know, when we talked about this in the alumni class, is that determination and drive and resourcefulness, I would make a great Slytherin. But if I am not careful, those wheels will burn out on the side of the road. Just drifting a little wee bit. Drifting with ADD is just the silliest thing. But I, you know, I had to learn how to take that time. And part of that for me is having little things that recenter me and focus. You know, I picked up running, and as an asthmatic, that's hilarious, but I've, you know, persevered through it, and I can run 30 minutes nonstop and be fine. I mean, I do need my inhaler before, but
Hashtag goals. Oh my God.
Hashtag goals.
What?
I can run. And I run actually about a 7.5 minute mile, 30 minutes nonstop.
I have so many goals. Oh my God. That's crazy.
Couch to 5K. I'm going to throw my love to them.
That actually just showed up on my radar like 2 days ago in an email. And I went, I should flag that. And I didn't delete it. I didn't kick it to spam. I went, Couch to 5K. I got to look into that. Really?
Couch to 5K is what I did. Yeah. And I did a special version of it called Pod Runner. I'm sure if you Google Pod Runner first day to 5K, it will come up. That's Pod Runner first day to 5K. It is also a podcast. They also have a webpage. Oh. And I downloaded their 9-week program and I stuck with it. Despite, you know, some days where I wanted to cry, despite some days where I just wasn't feeling it. And I made it all 9 weeks to the end, now I'm down to running twice a week, 30 minutes straight with asthma, which is always a good time.
That is crazy.
Yeah. I like to live dangerously.
That's amazing.
It's a bit of a problem, but yeah, no, the running, and I do yoga, and I garden. I find it's little moments for me.
You live in New York. How do you garden?
I actually have a backyard for the time being. For another 2 months, I have backyard. I have several plants growing, some of which are dying slowly because I am not the best. I'm a loving plant mother. But as Bonnie will tell you, the ninja concept of watering my contacts is not my specialty. Much like my contacts, sometimes I kill plants. But I mean, I will say I do more damage to plants than I do to my conscience, but it's a work in progress. We're learning. That's what's important. You know, I've got time to make this better.
It's so good. I love it.
So
yes, Kristen, tell everybody how to stay in touch with you, how to stay plugged in for all the things that you've got going on. I know you've mentioned several festivals. Is there like a one place that we can connect with you online, social media? Like, what is the Kristen Center?
Number one is probably Twitter, because everything that I post on my active Facebook page, which is Kristen May Carbone, nice and easy, that all gets pushed to Twitter anyway. So things will always end up on Twitter. If you want to see video content, I would suggest my Facebook page, again, Kristen May Carbone, because there is some stuff that is native there. As opposed to, it all does also ends up on YouTube, which is Kristen Amazing, spelled KristenAmazing.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. Threw that in. Kristen Amazing. Yeah. I've got a way with words sometimes.
That's clever.
And naming things. So yeah, you can find me at Twitter first, Facebook second, YouTube third. And
Tell me what roles you hope to play in your trajectory. I mean, you got like seriously 50, 60 years left. What do you want to play?
Long game. Yep. I mean, and I'm talking real long game.
Sure, why not?
Sassy grandmother.
You want to be like Betty White?
I want to be Betty White with purple hair, at least one streak of purple. And I've only resisted the purple. Purple's my favorite color. It's on my phone case for those of you who can see it. Those of you who can't, it's all over my Facebook. It's all over everything. One purple streak, sassy grandmother, Betty White style. I love roles that make people think. I like smart comedy. I would love to get better at writing it. And I like female characters that aren't afraid to say what they feel and yet aren't afraid to also creak open a little bit of that vulnerable side. Because I'm sass with heart, and that's yes. Big love heart, it. Bigger sass, biggest barrel of laughs.
What?
Love
so good. I'm like, wait, what just happened? That's amazing. Yes.
I always joke that Ninja Carly, who was an LA transplant from the New York City ninja community, I always joke, every time I see her, I come up with a new log line.
What is it about her that makes...
I have no idea. Because she always jokes that, you know, she's working on hers. And every time I see her, I'm like, oh, I've got a new one for myself. I'm sorry, Carly.
I got another for you, but you know, to create one for me.
And she's she's always like, you know, you're helping me narrow it down. Because you know, again, it's type and brand and all the different flavors. And we have certain similarities. And I think seeing a different version of what I could be helps me become more clear about who I am myself. And she's just such a positive, wonderful force that it works.
I love her. And she's my new pole sister because I took her to, we will have the pole. It's okay.
We will.
We're going to wrap this up, but I really want to hit this because I think this is actually a spectacular piece of conversation. You've got someone that when you look at her, you go, we're probably going out for the same kind of roles, and you're inspired by her rather than mad at her for being your competition. Can we talk a little bit about how you live from a center of, I am inspired by people that are doing what I do rather than I am mad at them for potentially taking my space? Because so many actors come from a place of, I need this, let me elbow you out of the way, rather than the ninja way of going, great, if it's not me, I hope it's you. I want it to be you. Like, how do you center yourself like that? Because I think that's kind of beautiful.
It's hard. I'm not going to lie. All the things I said today, they do take practice and work, and I still myself work at them every day. And I had to, I won't lie that I had to get to a point for certain things where I had to hide certain Facebook post because I found sometimes that they weren't approaching life the same way I was. And there was time where I would butt up against it. And like, I don't want to get negatively into my head. Yeah. I think what happened is I've built such a beautiful community of supportive, caring people who fight for each other and work with and for each other and support each other every day. And I think why it's so easy is because sometimes when I see people who go up for the same roles as me, we don't approach, sometimes there's that, the approach that doesn't mesh. And I feel like I know when the energy is wrong, and I know when I feel like there's some weird energy shift that I don't like. And so that's when I am okay with telling myself, maybe you need to back away and give yourself time to come into a cleaner headspace before you continue to engage. And I think that's been and it's hard to admit that because we always want the best of ourselves and for ourselves. But being negative is so easy. It's comforting because it allows you to dig into the part of yourself that stays in comfort, and it's hard to push past. But I love the people I work with, and sometimes it's loving the people that don't love you back in a very gentle way, you know, not putting yourself into a position where you're taking care of something that doesn't serve you. But when you come from a place of service, and I always try to put myself in a mindset of service and love, and if not me, them, and it will be me soon. Cause I think creating my work has helped me with that too, because I'm not coming from a place of a scarcity mindset anymore. So I don't need to hide away from the successes of others because I'm building my own. And it's hard because this is not the linear journey that most actors take. And I had to be, and again, talking about being okay with your brand, I had to be okay with the fact that I'm a rebel, and I've never in my life since I was born followed a traditional path ever. And I have to be okay with that because everything in life tells you you have to. And this was the biggest lesson I learned, is that it is okay to live outside the box. It is okay. It is scary, and it'll be a little bit more different. It'll be a little bit more difficult, but it will be so rewarding for you. Go for it. And that, I think, took away so much of my pain and stress.
And it would be impossible for you to live in the structure. Like that, that would just kill you.
It would cut me off at the knees. It would. It stifled me horribly. And I think that's part of what I struggle so much, is because I was trying to fit my little square peg into a round hole. And I'm not even a square. I'm a star.
Oh, girl, you got so many different.
Or like a rainbow. I'm a squiggle.
You don't fit into anything.
No.
Amazing.
And it's learning to embrace the beautiful. And there are some people who do beautifully in structures and embrace that. It's clearing away that fear of embracing those beautiful moments. And I think that's what's done the most for me. And I have to thank you for all of that.
Girl, I love this. And you so much. This is seriously one of those things that's like cracking people open as they're listening to this. I already know.
I hope so. I hope someone, I pray for the fissure of joy to come spewing out of your volcano of happiness.
All right. Before we wrap this up, anything else that you want to make sure people know, like in terms of how to reach you, to stay in touch, anything you want to promote?
Feel free to tweet at me. I tweet very silly, fun things, and I love when people engage with me in silly, fun things. I always love collaborating. So if you're ever in the mood to collaborate on a script or a project that you've got interest in, please, I love to explore creative art with other people. Please tweet at me again at Kay May Carbone. And if you're not New York City based and you're in LA, well, sometimes I can work as a local hire because I've got friends.
Woo!
So sometimes I can come out there for fun.
Yeah, baby.
That's me.
Kristen May Carbone, one of my very favorite interviews. Thank you so much for this time together.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
All right, my friends, this has been Bonnie Gillespie for another episode of The Work. Thank you so much for joining me here. Please join me over at BonnieGillespie.com for all sorts of goodness between episodes. And until next time, stay ninja.